question, smashtions.
If you've got a question, send it to correspondence@kirbynamo.com and we'll see what we can do with them. Sean Warren, dear Fast and Ten Your Seatbelts, I have listened with great interest to the recent discussion of showing films to children, but ending the viewing experience before the films reach a section that then stops it from being family friendly. So there's an overlap, an overspill.
An overspill.
This has made me think about films that should have ended before their natural conclusion for all film viewers. Either because the film could have been so much better by finishing 5 minutes sooner, or that the ending is so bad or cringeworthy, it detracts from the build-up. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
To give you an example, albeit an unseasonal one, my wife and I absolutely adore the film Scrooged, and we watch it every Christmas without fail. I love Bill Murray's portrait of Frank Cross, the twist on The Ghosts of Christmas, and the way the story plays out.
Yeah.
It is a really entertaining film and could have ended so much better at the point where Frank Cross's assistant's son talks for the first time and Frank welcomes his newfound purpose. But no, it ends with Bill Murray talking directly to the cinema audience, asking them to start singing, changing to asking only one side of the theatre to sing before the other side, then the men, no, the real men, and so on. I can't help but wish it ended sooner to avoid this, what I consider a cringe-inducing ending.
I had completely forgotten that.
And I will always eject the DVD before this part. That does sound terrible.
I have no memory of that at all.
It might have worked in the cinema. It definitely doesn't work with only my wife and I watching. So my question for the two of you is therefore as follows. Is there a film that you have to turn off before the natural end as the ending ruins or at least detracts from the rest of the film for you? That certainly sounds like, I mean, it says maybe a bit of improv from Bill Murray, which might have worked like once, or in a packed theatre. But you think how many times you go and see a film, there's like six people there, where no one wants to be part of that ending. They just want to leave.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very good example from Sean. Are there any other movies that you wish finished?
Well, you know that I actually made a version of Shawshank Redemption that ends on the bus.
Yeah, but you kind of
I cut the end off.
Yeah, didn't you do a different ending?
So it's meant to end on the bus.
Yeah,
and it's meant to end with "I hope," and then it goes black.
Everybody else loves them,
and then it comes up, and they're at Saint Croix and sanding down a boat. And you know,
I like that ending scene.
And there was almost a thing when he was going to be playing the harmonica, apparently. And it's rubbish.
The harmonica would have been a little bit too much.
The whole thing is a little bit too much. There's no reason for that scene to exist. It's completely fatuous.
This is more controversial.
Okay.
And I have mentioned this before, but I still think that Interstellar should finish when Matthew McConaughey's character is floating and actually says, "I've just thought of something."
Hang on, lads.
I thought something.
Got an idea.
Because the last sort of 15 minutes of Interstellar, you're going to...
Yeah.
Really?
No, I agree. I think that's a very valid point. There's also...
I don't think I'd eject the DVD or stop the stream or walk out of a cinema. I don't loathe it, or I don't think it's as bad as the Bill Murray.
No.
I just think, maybe you could have...
There's always the argument about the end of Psycho and, you know, having to explain the plot. I suppose there's an argument there. As I said, there is only one case in which I have on my DVD shelves a version of a film in which the end annoyed me so much that I took it off.
We're hoping that Chris Nolan will come on the show soon to talk about his new movie, which will of course be fantastic. It's going to be fantastic. And I'm just wondering how well the interview will have to be going if I dare to bring up.
Chris, on the subject of Interstellar, do you think it would have been better if it just ended with him going, "Hang on a minute, lads, I've got an idea"?
You've made it exactly. Michael Caine, coach off the cliff. It's that edit. The Michael Caine edit.
He loves Michael Caine because Michael Caine's in the movie. He actually could have got Michael Caine to overdub. "Hang on a minute, lads. I've got an idea."
Sean, that's pretty good. Paul Morrison, good morning from a long-term listener, first-time emailer to this incarnation of the show and a Vanguardista. No doubt you have had multiple responses regarding the American gangster movie. So this is in the last questions, Schmestions. Someone was trying to identify a film.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple responses.
When I said outside of Gangs of New York, I couldn't think of anything.
Yeah. Regarding the American gangster movie that a listener couldn't quite place, but on the off chance that I have responded, and then Paul uses the word timiously, which, so it's time and then usly, which I've never seen written down, and I looked it up and it means sufficiently early, but I've never heard anyone else use the word
timiously.
Timiously, yeah. Meaning sort of on time, sufficiently early. You know, have you filled in your questionnaire timiously? Yes. Have you done the prep for the show timiously?
It's an education, isn't it?
Anyway, says Paul, who clearly has a better vocab than I do, it may help to shift the search to the other side of the world, as it was an Australian gangster movie called Two Hands, starring a pre-international fame Heath Ledger as Jimmy.
Wow.
He loses boss Brian Brown's cash for the sake of a dip in the sea on a hot day, also featuring Rose Byrne. It's worth checking out if you can find it, as are most Australian films from the 90s. I mean, that's a pretty broad recommendation. Information courtesy of time spent watching late night cult movies on Channel 4.
Yeah, I have never seen it. I just did the thing about Googling myself and it, and I have never seen it.
And Sigo says, gents, not sure about the New York backdrop, but the losing of a precious package whilst having a swim sounds very close to Heath Ledger in Two Hands. The scene was set in Bondi Beach. So that goes back to when we were doing What's That Film? You're absolutely sure it's in New York, and actually it turns out it's Bondi Beach. So that's the big thing that you have.
Easy to get confused.
So I'm afraid we've hooked people into this way of thinking, Mark, and I know you're going to love this very much. Tom Patchell, dear professor and MBE, I'm hoping that the members of the church will be able to help me. I remember watching a film, this sounds very familiar, the first on our family's brand new VHS in the 1980s, and for the life of me, I cannot remember its name. So clearly what we're saying here is the owner, the burden on the research is... the Vanguardista.
Yes.
Not you.
No.
Witness that last one. Solved.
Solved.
By Boom. Our listeners, because it's Two Hands with Heath Ledger. So Tom says, from what I recall, the family moved to a new area because of the father's job designing a spacesuit for a mission to one of the planets. They join a local country club, but a Stepford Wives transformation has happened with his wife and kids. He has to use the suit he was designing to go to a hell beneath the country club to rescue his and other family members. Wow. Thanks to the church, says Tom. What is that? What's that film?
Wow.
WTF. So the family...
Is it that 1970s film, The Man Who Went to the Country Club and Discovered a Hell Beneath It, in which you had to wear a spacesuit to rescue his family?
Volume one, yes. That's it. So does that ring any bells for anybody?
No.
Tom Patchell is not asking Mark. Absolutely is not asking Mark.
That's good, because Mark's not answering.
There you go. Benjamin in Blackheath. Dear most excellent doctors, I love a good movie soundtrack as much as The Next Man. Unless that is, The Next Man has a whole show devoted to them on a national radio station.
That's very much like the Ricky Gervais gag. I like a drink as much as The Next Man, unless The Next Man is Mel Gibson.
Good point. That's a good gag, actually.
It was a good gag.
My question is this. Can listening multiple times to a movie soundtrack affect your subsequent viewing of the movie?
Yes.
I find that it can, and not in a good way. Over-familiarity with the score can take me out of a scene by shifting my attention to the music alone or to the associations it has acquired that are independent of the film. As a result, I even find myself reluctant to listen to the soundtracks of my favourite movies. I also say that, you know, it's a problem. Well, but no, actually, it's not a problem for Mark's show, because you play the most obscure, squonky soundtracks.
Atonal squonk fests are us.
I also experience one example of almost the exact opposite. I love Mark Knopfler's score for Local Hero, as, of course, does everybody. But I've never seen the movie, and I'm not sure I want to, because I don't want to change what the soundtrack means to me. I probably just need to lighten up and get over myself. But I was wondering if any of the above rings true for either of you. Benjamin in Blackheath.
I mean, it does. If you fall in love with a soundtrack album and you get to know all the cues like the back of your hand... I mean, for example, in the case of Local Hero, the album is arranged as an album, so the cues are in slightly different order. And so that thing that, that opens the album doesn't open the film. The film opens with down, 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 you know, that's a bit, but the only time that it's distracting is if you listen to a soundtrack album and it's got whole cues on it, and then only sections of the cues are used in the film, and you almost just want the cue to keep going because it's like, you know, that's thing. But you know, from you got to remember when I was young, I started buying. So that's how I got introduced to classical music, because I bought soundtrack albums, and so you know I bought the Rollerball soundtrack album, which had da 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 da, and also Adagio, you know, the Albinoni that isn't Albinoni. And my dad bought me the Austro Sprach Zarathustra, of which the beginning of it, Sunrise, whatever it is used at the very beginning of 2001. The whole of the rest of the piece isn't in it. So it does. It hasn't put me off. I would really advise you to watch Local Hero, because I don't think there's anything in Local Hero that's going to dent the. And also, what one thing it will do, will it will explain why, for example, there's that strange Jerry Rafferty song in there, because that's just something they needed as a Door Slam radio play. That's all it is. And of course, Jerry Rafferty wrote this beautiful song for the album. So
just on the, I know we've mentioned this before, but the Albinoni inverted commas Adagio, because that's used very movingly in Gallipoli and is associated with mass slaughter. Now, when I hear it, I just think of work and reading out a confession about someone who's done something terribly embarrassing, and it's all hilarious. Yes, so,
and another generation will think of Wendy Craig walking around the park in Butterflies.
So, and it's been used, you know,
everywhere. A number of times. Everywhere.
Benjamin says, P.S. Simon, I see what you mean about Billy Bragg's Tank Park Salute.
Oh,
in tears after only the first verse. So yeah. It is one of those.
It is.
Again, you know, this is.
But you're quite right. What you said about it was I'd almost not listen to it because I can't bear the grief.
No, that's right. And it's a song he wrote, in case you missed that particular episode, it's a song he wrote about the death of his father from cancer. But and he still won't say why it's called Tank Park Salute. He hasn't told anybody, but that's the song that his roadies or anyone he was working with says, can you let me know if you're going to sing that song tonight? Because I want to leave. I don't want to be in the same room. And in fact, there is another reference to that. I might actually do that now, I think. So
okay.
There's a question from Sarah Birrell Ivory. Sarah Ivory in Edinburgh, grade four clarinet, or was it grade six? I can't remember. Long-time listener, proud Vanguardista, and all appropriate additions to that. Dear both, two simple points to assist with recent fan mails. Could Adam, who talked about, okay, so we've sorted that one. That's the Two Hands movie, so yes. That's the first. Second one, saddest song you just can't help but listen to over and over again, Ed Sheeran's much overlooked Supermarket Flowers, about what happens after the rigmarole of the funeral when you start to work out how you're going to get on with the rest of your life, the loneliest of grief's cycle. Anyway, I was not familiar with Supermarket Flowers.
I'm not.
By Ed Sheeran. It's fantastic. I mean, but here's what I'm saying to you, Mark, don't listen to it.
Okay.
I mean, it's. I think it's.
You know, I will now, don't you?
Okay. Well, if in which case, do it on your own.
Okay.
And don't do it in public.
Right. That's a good. Yeah. Thank you. That's a good tip.
But it's a really. It is an extraordinary song. Supermarket Flowers is just like the perfect title. You know, what do I do with this? And now, what do I do with everything else? Very good. So, Sarah, thank you very much. So, top suggestion. So, not really a question. Or unless the question is grade four clarinet, or was it grade six? What do you think, Mark?
Six.
Because I thought it was grade seven, but
ooh,
I have a higher opinion of Sarah.
Apparently so.
Neil in Nice.
Neil or Nile?
Well, no, it's definitely Neil. Okay. Neil in Nice, comma, France. I don't think, are there any other Nices?
There's almost certainly a Nice, Las Vegas, isn't there? Or at least, no, not Las Vegas, Nice, Nevada.
Yeah, America will have a version of it where they'll either call it Nice or Nietzsche or something. Dear Sybil and Sibelius, I listened with interest to your discussion on Take Three last week related to music that brings up emotion, and in particular Simon's reference to Sibelius's Finlandia, which I think I mentioned because there is a particular section in that which
that made you cry.
Well, it makes me well up for no apparent reason other than it sounds as though it was intended to generate that response. Yeah.
And this is one that does it for me. It's Finland, Finland, Finland. All together, Finophiles.
Less so, that one. As a child and teenager, I played the trumpet for many years, reaching grade eight before discovering bars and discotheques as a young adult, which stopped all other hobbies in the tracks. It's part of my musical youth, not that one. No Dutchie was passed. Twice, I've told you my past the Dutchie story, haven't I? I have.
Definitely. No, you haven't. Go on.
Am I
No, go on.
Okay, so I'm interviewing a man who's actually a friend of mine, Douglas Alexander, who at the time was in the Labour government, and he was Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster.
Right.
So which is a role which is gets you in the cabinet, but it's not like Foreign Secretary or Home Secretary or Defence Secretary. It's Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster. It has specific duties.
Okay.
And his constituency was Paisley. And he was talking about, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I said, when you're on the train from London and you're going up to Glasgow, do you pass the Duchy on the,
the right
on the left-hand side or the right-hand side? And he said, I can't believe you've asked that question. But anyway.
Well done.
But I thought it was the only time it's possible to actually use that, you know, as a question.
I just explained to keen-eared listeners, all the stomach noises you can hear is because I'm doing 4-3 at the moment, and this is one of the three, so sorry.
So 4-3, meaning you eat on 4 days and you don't eat for three.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they alternate days.
Mm-hmm.
And is the Wednesday, which is the day we record this, is that always going to be a non-eaty day?
We'll see.
Because, you know,
it's going to cause problems, isn't
it? I thought it was the central line.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it is the central line, but it's just, it's my central
line. It's your central line.
Hey!
So can you not eat anything?
No. Well, no. I drink coffee.
From morning...
From sun up to sundown.
In which case, the coffee is going to be banging in your head.
Hey! We're going Mark to on Wednesday. This for a couple of weeks now.
Mark on Wednesday, Mark on Friday, Mark...
That's right. If you want to ask me something, make sure you do it on a day that I'm eating.
Okay. I'd be interested to know, because Matt, who I work with at Greatest Hits, he's on a four... He does 4 and 3.
Yeah.
I know the 5 and 2. Lots of people do the 5 and 2. If the 4... I mean, is 4 and 3... It sounds quite hardcore.
Well, you're not hardcore unless you live hardcore.
Okay, well, that's a very, very good answer. Yeah. Might you go not eating for 5 and eating for 2?
As far as I can tell...
That sounds medically unwise.
As far as I can tell, the... So I'm doing this now in order for a very specific...
Yes.
Because I'm, you know, I weighed more than was a good idea. I am the larger gentleman anyway. When I get down to what's more sensibly considered
11 and a half.
Yeah. If I get down to 16, I'll be lucky. Then I might just do 5-2 from then on, because people say in general that's, you know. But it only works for some people. It's not for everybody. I mean, it was
also, holidays are a problem.
Oh, holidays are like 7-7. I mean, I'm just 24-7. But it's interesting that, you know, because you said that Matt's doing this. I didn't know that because I told you about this yesterday. But I've done it before and I don't find it a problem. I find it works, but it's not for everyone.
Anyway, back to Neil in Nice. Sorry, that was a Ronnie Corbett style diversion.
Anyway.
As part of my musical youth, twice a week, I played in a youth orchestra. When Simon mentioned Finlandia, it rang a bell. So I put it, there aren't any bells in Finlandia. So I put it on Spotify. Wow. Not only is it a beautiful piece of music, but I was swamped by the sweet nostalgia of practicing it again and again and again 30 years ago in preparation for concerts. So not only thanks for the weekly trifecta of takes, but thank you for creating a moment of joy for me through your questions and schmestern ramblings. Rude. My question to you both is more film related. What film does the whole world seem to love, but you have no idea why that is, as you think it sucks? For which the only thing I would like to contribute is The Piano. Welcome to New Zealand, where it's raining. And we've been told off about this many times. Andy Serkis particularly told us off. So is there a film that the established critical opinion is that this is a great film? But you think otherwise.
Well, I share your feeling about The Piano. We both wrote about it in The Movie Doctors, although you wrote that. But the way we wrote The Movie Doctors was that we both wrote bits and then the other one rewrote it. Yeah. But I still think the funniest line in that book is, "Welcome to New Zealand where it's raining." I remember the good lady Professor Herindors saying that if she read another academic essay, undergraduate essay, describing... Harvey Keitel sticking his finger through the hole in Holly Hunter's tights, she would not be responsible for for herself. I think that's the one that everyone absolutely loves. I mean, obviously there's loads of things like, you know, Best Picture winners like Driving Miss Daisy. I don't understand how that happened. And I suppose you could argue that I didn't get the Star Wars thing for a long time, although everybody thinks Star Wars is a work of genius. I like Empire Strikes Back, but as I recently said, I watched the first 3 Indiana Jones movies and was very underwhelmed by them. Although we've already had a lot of people saying, "Well, that's just wrong."
You spoilt Driving Miss Daisy for me, not only because of what your accurate criticism, but because you were familiar with the porn version, which is Driving Miss Daisy Crazy, which then instantly just goes, well, I can't watch that film because that's what I'm thinking.
That's a very different film, isn't it?
It is. I can only imagine in which way that is a very different film. I would like to know, before we finish, just for future questions and semesters, it might be this doesn't go anywhere. If there are any other pieces, I'm just going to mention one more time. So the Finlandia thing puzzles me, but maybe musicologists can explain that a piece of music for which there are no words, there is no reason for it to affect you musically, it doesn't have any connotations to you, your family, anything, but you hear a piece of music and it affects you emotionally.
Hits you in the feels.
Clearly the music is doing its work, and it, not necessarily in a movie, because then you've got the pictures that go with it. So just the sound. Yeah. If there is a piece of music that overwhelms you because of the way the notes are constructed and put on a page.
Finland, Finland, Finland.
Yeah, but probably not that one.
The country where I long to be pony trekking or camping.
At Kermode and Mayo.
That is a brilliant film, isn't it? Quite a long way from Belgium.